in his fourth interview on the program during this campaign. All of them have been on the phone except the one at Indiana Black Expo. But now Mike Pence is sitting at the seat where candidates have sat, governors have sat, United States senators have sat, and movie stars have sat. He's the Republican candidate for governor, and he joins me live. Welcome. Welcome to Radio 1.
I'm delighted to be here, Amos. I really am. I feel better sitting here.
Let me first ask you, in the debate Wednesday night, you mentioned the roadmap.
Did I mention it?
Yeah, you mentioned it a few times. And I went and read it.
Yeah.
Which helps.
Good. Thank you very much.
Couple of things that I did not see in the roadmap. One of them has to do, in this eight years ago, when Mitch Daniels ran for governor, he reached out and reached out for support from African American businesses across the state, talked about improving the state's record in terms of utilizing minority-owned businesses. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the governor had leadership over the building of Lucas Oil Stadium, and the minority participation goals were outstanding. Nowhere in the roadmap did I see anything about what a Pence administration would do to help minority-owned businesses. Here we are in the largest African-American community here in the state. If you're governor, what would be your administration's policy to build upon what the current administration has done?
Well, the first thing I want to do is I want to make job creation job one for the next administration. I think for minority-owned businesses, for all businesses in Indiana, in the city and on the farm, we've just got to focus our energy on getting this economy moving again, and that's going to cause all ships to rise. If I become the governor, I'll be the chief law enforcement officer of the state, and we will strictly and clearly continue to implement the requirements of minority business enterprises, women business enterprises. And I'll stand by that. We've also added in there, you and I have talked about about trying to recognize the extraordinary contribution our veterans have made. But when you have an unemployment rate among recent returning servicemen and women that's twice the state unemployment rate, we've got to put attention on that. But not taking anything away from our commitment to minority business enterprise. Women business enterprises. This is a goal. This is a goal that we would add in addition to that. But I think the opportunity here for Indiana is really if we continue to stay on the path that we're on, and we add to that the kind of tax relief and regulatory reform that will invite investment into Indiana and all the corners of Indiana. I honestly believe that combined with our determination to make career and vocational education a priority in every high school again, that's going to be a winner for minority business enterprises. That's going to be a winner for businesses of every type across Indiana.
The other thing I did not see in the roadmap was corrections in two issues. One, corrections takes up a large percentage of the state budget.
Sure.
The governor had tried to come up with a way of not only rewriting our criminal justice laws and seeing are there ways to safely release nonviolent offenders back out into the community in a safe way. Have not heard your position on that. What do we do? What does a Pence administration do about corrections?
Well, let me be clear. And it was one of the more engaging parts of dialogue, I thought, in the debate the other night is when one of my competitors brought up the issue of public safety. And I'm proud to have been endorsed by the Indianapolis Fraternal Order of Police and the Indiana State Police Alliance, because we're really committed to putting public safety first and to making a commitment to law enforcement. But I took the opportunity in that debate to point out that in my career, I worked very closely with the late Congresswoman Julia Carson on legislation called the Second Chance Act. I always thought that when we reauthorized that bill after she had passed away, that we ought to add her name to it, because she simply was the driving force from where I sat behind legislation that said, look, you got about 4,000 inmates coming back. Let's just pick Indianapolis for a second. Back into Indianapolis every year. And the reality is that a large number of those, largely men, mm-hmm. are back in prison within the next 3 or 4 years. And that doesn't suggest to you that we've got a system in our society that is giving people a fulsome pathway back into becoming law-abiding citizens and making an honest living. Now, I believe in personal responsibility, and people are to be held to account for the decisions that they've made. When they violate the law, right. you got to do the time. But I also think we can do a better job working with public institutions, with faith-based organizations to create better pathways for people to say, look, I did my time. Right. I'd like a second chance. I'd like to be able to come out. And maybe it's getting additional education. Maybe it's learning a skilled trade. But giving them a pathway to earn the credibility to go back into the workforce and lead productive lives for themselves and for their families.
And I know you feel strongly not only about personal responsibility, but about redemption if someone turns their life around. If you're governor, because what we've heard
on this— I believe in second chances.
Yeah, what we've heard on this program over 9 years is the problem of that reentry isn't with government, but it is with the private sector, who either an insurance company is afraid or some corporate lawyer is afraid or somebody is afraid that taking a chance on that individual could come back and bite that business. You know, is this something where the bully pulpit of the governor could be used, sitting with the private sector and say, hey, look, guys, look, ladies, I'm trying to put all Hoosiers back to work who are willing to work. Kind of help me out here.
Look, Hoosiers are profoundly compassionate people. We believe in law and order, but we're profoundly compassionate people. And I think the short answer to your question is yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw that in Anderson, Indiana. I worked with leaders in the minority community in Anderson, Indiana, and we helped to develop some very effective, small but very effective transition programs in the aftermath of the passage of the Second Chance Act. I said in that debate the other night, I have two goals. Right. Number one, I want Indiana to be the worst place in America to commit a serious crime. Mm-hmm. I mean, people that have ill intent, I want them to drive around Indiana. Mm-hmm. But number two, I want Indiana to be the best place in America after you've done your time to get a second chance for people that want to come out. But it's going to take leadership. Sure. It's going to take engaging, looking at ways that we can engage the faith-based community, private organizations, and absolutely engage the business community to say, come in here and be a partner with us in creating pathways for these. It's men and women, but let's talk mostly about men. These men who are coming out and who have made a decision for whatever reason, a decision to lead a productive, law-abiding life. How do we give them a place where they can earn again the confidence of the community that this is someone that you want to give them a chance, you want to hire them and give them an opportunity to make a living?
When I pull the packet on the Second Chance Act, you and Julia Carson signed up to be co-sponsors on the same day. You were kind of in the second or third wave of co-sponsors. There were 92 co-sponsors on that legislation. There were only two from Indiana, you and Julia. And I talked to someone in Julia's office who's been around, someone with gray hair like the two of us, who said that Ms. Carson always got along with you. You always got along with Ms. Carson. Your ideologies are diametrically opposed.
Diametrically.
But you all were able to get along. There are people, Mike, listening to us right now who have viewed you through the prism of the last 4 to 8 years who don't remember you and Julia working together, who think this Mike Pence, that's a Tea Party guy, the perception. This is Mike Pence, this ultra-conservative guy. This is Mike Pence that was part of those guys in the House of Representatives trying to oppose the president. Now he's trying to be governor. Is he going to be that guy that we see on television in Washington that can't get along, that can't find common ground with the other side, that won't build partnerships and reach out to our community? Because I had forgotten about the relationship between you and Julia till someone formerly from her staff pulled my coat and cued me to that. Deal with that, because there are people listening right now that are going, I don't know whether I like this guy or not.
Well, and I think that's fair. Look, I'm a conservative. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not
and you don't disguise it.
Yeah, no, I'm a conservative, but I'm not in a bad mood about it. Mm-hmm. And I've always believed that, and part of this springs out of, you know, my own Christian faith, that, you know, to do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. I've always believed that in treating others the way you want to be treated, that civility is really important in the political process. And I think the reason why the late Julia Carson, who was not, as they say in Washington, my good friend, we were friends. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget after she passed away, and I ran into Andre Carson, mm-hmm. congressman, right. before he was a congressman, and I walked up to him and I said, I'm saddened for your loss, and I said it may be a surprise to you, but I consider Julia to be a friend, mm-hmm. and he looked at me and we have a very positive relationship right. despite our differences. Mm-hmm. He looked at me and said, "You don't have to tell me that at all." He said, she's spoken of you to me, and I know how she felt about you," which was very moving to me. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, anytime I'd meet her, from early on, I would say, "How are you?" And she said, "I'm blessed by the best."
Mm, that's right.
And we would always start there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there weren't too many things we could work on together because right. she believed as passionately in her philosophy of government as I did. But this Second Chance Act was one that
we found common ground.
She reached out to me mm-hmm. and said, can we work together in moving this forward? And I'll tell you what, despite any differences we had on issues, she was as tenacious and effective a legislator and an advocate for the things she believed in than anybody I ever served with.
239-1310, 239-1310, Afternoons with Amos, or send me an email at praiseindia.com or a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. I'm going to lay low. All we ask, we want to try to get to as many as possible with the opportunity to talk to Mike Pence. All I ask is keep your comments short, to the point. I'm going to be like Martha Raddatz here today. maybe there's something about a moderator who has had to be with our men and women in uniform and wear the body armor and the helmet. I mean, if you're in that environment, and everybody, I think, in the country that watches ABC knows she's been there with yeah. our men and women. Maybe that's what they need as moderators, is somebody that's been close to our men and women. Let's start with Pastor Joy Thornton. Hi there.
Hey, Amos, I want to ask one question to Mr. Pence, and that is, how does he feel about blending in his administration? And I'm speaking particularly about, we don't see, with all of the education and advancement in our society, people are still segregated on just having European Americans in key leadership roles, and I don't see no Asians, I don't see African Americans, Native Americans, anyone. I want to know, what is his position? If he's conservative, does that mean that he's excluding the ethnicity that needs to be brought to really exemplify what Republicans embraced from 1830 as their mantra as it relates to anti-slavery? But how does he see that on the courts and all of these other ways in which he can appoint folk? Mm. I'm just tired of America being just European-centric and not adding in the melting pot, which have powerful and very educated and well-informed people that can help really be the.
All right. Let me let Mr. Pence respond.
Well, number one, thank you for a very thoughtful question. And as a member of the Party of Lincoln, mm-hmm. I often call myself a Jack Kemp Republican. Jack Kemp became a close personal friend of mine before he passed away a few years ago. And Jack was someone who was a congressman. He would run for president. He became the secretary of HUD, Amos, remember. But Jack had a profound influence on my life. We first met in 1988, and then when I entered Congress, I would eventually hold the same leadership position that he held. Jack and I became very close friends. His impact on me, though, was that Lincoln vision of the Republican Party was created on the principle of equality of opportunity. Abraham Lincoln becomes president on his belief that all men are created equal. Mm-hmm. Jack Kemp understood that. He understood the profound legacy of the Republican Party with the African American community. And as folks get to know me, they'll find out that among my ambitions is to continue to be a voice in my party for a party that's inclusive, a party that is about the equality of opportunity, regardless of race or creed or color. And but with regard to the point that the pastor made, I think the first choice in state government always needs to be, when you're making decisions, whether it be in the executive branch or appointments to the judicial branch, you just need to focus on finding the very best men and women to serve the people of Indiana. But right after you set that very high standard of competence and character and ability and background, then I think it is relevant that that Indiana's government should look like Indiana. I really do believe that we ought to draw on all of the communities of this state as we build Indiana into the state that works.
239-1310, back to the phones. And Frank, hi there.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon.
Congressman Pence, it's a pleasure to talk to both of you.
Hi, Frank.
I'll make my comments brief. Mr. Pence, we who are disabled in this state, and in particular, we, the National Federation of the Blind, every year we have what we call a Washington seminar. Mm. And this runs from the last of January to about the first two or three days of February, about 4 to 5 days. We have been to your office several times, and we have left off what we would like to see done as far as legislation on the federal level. Mm-hmm. For the last 10 years that I know, we've never met you personally. Mm. You've never been there. Also, in this state, Indiana, there's an 80-20 program as far as matching funds for voc rehab and services for disabled people. It's an 80-20. Mm-hmm. Indiana never matches the amount that's allotted by the federal government. I'd like to know why. Why doesn't Indiana care for its disabled community? People who are blind, people in other states have a lot better services because they are their states match the federal allotment. Mm-hmm. I can give you an example. Kentucky, for an example, they have about $10 to $12 million a year.
Oh, no,
why should I vote for you, sir, when you haven't? We've sent you letters, invited you to our state convention.
All right, let me let the congressman respond.
Well, number one, I remember seeing delegations over the years come through the office. I apologize if I wasn't there on the ones that you came through. We always put a very high priority. I believe in servant leadership, right. And so I think I have a reputation for whether it be school groups or families or groups coming out on particular issues. I think I have a pretty good reputation for taking time for folks. If I have the chance to serve as governor of Indiana, we'll take the same kind of servant leadership and accessibility to that. But it's not a perfect record, so I do apologize if that you had that impression or had that experience. I will say I think societies are judged by how we deal with our most vulnerable and people that are struggling with physical challenges and other challenges. And so let me just say I have an open mind. I would look forward to making good on that meeting with you and with others if I have the chance to be governor of Indiana, and we'll look for ways that we can improve those services and the available resources. But again, we have to do it in a fiscally responsible way. We have to make sure that we're living within the means of the people of Indiana. But I would look forward to listening and hearing you out.
But you've also said in the campaign, thank you, Frank, you've also said that you want to make sure that we're getting all of the money back that we give. So if all of a sudden there's an 80% money, federal money that's there that might need to be matched, that might be some money that's being left on the table that could help.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, you know, for me, fiscal integrity is everything in public life. Everything starts
You want the books to really balance.
I want them to be honestly balanced, as they have been for the last 8 years. And that takes some tough choices. It takes some priorities. It means people don't always get everything they think they could get. But I will tell you, we talked about veterans earlier. You know, one of the heartbreaking statistics out there is Indiana rates very low on the return on federal benefits to our veterans in this state. And it's one of the reasons why we've made a commitment to make a significant improvement in our veteran services officers, organizations around, and individuals around the state. I want to be certified with the Veterans Affairs Administration. I want to make that a priority for Indiana, so our veteran service officers can just simply have more access to more resources to get our veterans what they deserve.
Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. You got about a minute.
Yes, I have two questions. One is, why are the Republicans so disrespectful against our president? And every time he comes up with an idea, you block it. But yet still you want the blacks to vote for you. So I'll hang up and listen to your comment.
Mike Pence, do you acknowledge that African Americans regard President Obama the way Republicans regard Ronald Reagan?
Oh, I think I think I sense that and understand it. You know, I was at the president's inauguration, and I found it, despite our political differences. You know, I was about 10 rows away from the president when he raised his right hand. I looked out at the better part of a million people on the National Mall, and it was a diverse crowd, but there were an awful lot of proud African Americans that were there that day. Crowd went all the way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Permit me to say this.
Yeah.
The crowd went all the way to the Lincoln Memorial, and I found the scene moving. And that day, the day the president on January 20th was sworn in, I issued a statement saying that, and despite any differences, today was a historic milestone in the march toward a more perfect union. And I recognize that. And I actually had some cynics out in the political press say to me, are you buying into the Obama? And I said, no, I'm just recognizing this was an incredibly important milestone. And I understand and respect the way that every African-American would cherish that moment. What I would just say to the caller is I didn't disagree with the president on everything. I strongly supported the president's policies with regard to Afghanistan. I was in Republican leadership at the time, met with the president in the cabinet room, expressed to him our support for the policies he was advancing. I try to take them one at a time, but I will say to the caller, I think there is sometimes rhetoric expressed toward this president, expressed toward the last president, that is a disservice to the political debate. I think respecting the presidency, right, respecting the president of the United States is an American tradition, and I've always sought to live up to it.
Very briefly, because I'm running short of time,
yep.
You family is very important to you, and you want your administration, if you're elected,
yep,
to try to strengthen families. One of the themes that has come out on this show, we don't ever hear from deadbeat moms. We don't ever hear from deadbeat dads. But I hear from responsible moms, and more importantly, I hear from responsible dads who are meeting their obligations. They're paying their child support on time, but they have the trouble to try to connect with their kids. Maybe the mom is trying to fight with them, and then that poor dad has to go to court at their expense, fight the system just to try to be a dad in the lives of their child. If you're elected and you're talking about having your government look at, was it family impact statement? How does government impact the family? Would that also include looking at making sure that, okay, if a couple is separated, but if the dad is keeping their obligations to pay the child support to the child and they want to adhere to their rights, which is the right to be with your child, to visit, that we don't put impediments in those responsible dads' way?
I'm open to those discussions, Amos. I think I will credit Governor Daniels, among many of his accomplishments, is a significant increase in child support collection in the state of Indiana. A lot of those vulnerable moms, a lot of those single moms out there are getting a lot more of what they're supposed to be getting because of the efforts of the Daniels administration, and I think they ought to be proud of that. But you know, I'm open to these conversations. I do think that that a part of the conversation going forward in the state of Indiana ought to be, how can we encourage more of our young people to get married, to stay married, and to wait to have kids until they're married? Mm-hmm. The reality is we have 22% of our kids who live in poverty today. And there is, the policy groups on the right and on the left, you know this.
Yes, they all agree.
Have agreed for now a decade and a half that one of the most effective ways to reduce childhood poverty is to have more people living in two-parent married households and raising kids in those households. So what we've suggested that we do is let's make sure Indiana doesn't put any barriers in the way with new regulations that work against family formation. But I'd also like to call a conference together. It'd be the first of its kind in the nation where we bring together a diverse group of voices to talk about leaders from the faith community, leaders from the philanthropic community, from business, and bring in the best minds in the country and say, how could Indiana create an environment where more of our young people could choose to get married and to stay married and to wait to have kids until they're married? That's the best that we can do for our kids. It will impact their well-being, reduce childhood poverty, improve educational attainment, and I think it's a discussion worth having. And Indiana's I think poised to be a leader in this regard. But I'm talking about this not along the traditional fault lines of social issues. You know, I'm a conservative, and I'm conservative on social issues of life and marriage. What I'm really talking about is a consensus around everybody saying, let's just all say that marriage matters, and are there ways in the private sector and
to lift that value up,
to lift that up, celebrate it, and encourage more of our young people to choose marriage.
And this roadmap is online. The roadmap is where?
Roadmapforindiana.com.
He's got that memorized. Mike Pence, he's the Republican candidate for governor. Thanks very much for being here. Next week, candidates for school. We're the only media that's letting people hear from candidates for school board. You know, the legislature said, let's do this in the fall. It was like, they'll get buried with governor and president. But we got the candidates from Wayne Township School Board. We'll be here on Monday. IPS will be here on Monday Tuesday. Susan Brooks will be here on Wednesday. The other guy, one of the other guys you're running against, will be here Thursday. Maybe even the Heartland Film Festival next Friday. I'm Amos Brown. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday live at 1.